yesterday we started to go through the sugya of Isurei Hana, doing mitzvos of Isurei Hana, and we pointed out that there are three separate sugyas here. There's Ein Shas Hadchak Raya, which is the only part that we got to yesterday, and we didn't finish that yet. And then we have mitzvos Lavli Hanas Nitnu, which will take us a couple of days. And then we have Kitusim Mechla Shiru, which will probably take us a day or two as well. So this is a massive undertaking to go through Lamed Aleph from the base. I'm spending a lot of time in it, even though I keep thinking this is the case, I'm pretty sure that this is really like the last amud of like major sugyas, like lots of Shas sugyas piled together. I mean, we've had an incredible run of Shas sugyas, starting with the Osig Mitzvah and Chavei. Just I don't know of 6 or 7 blood in Shas, including the first 6 or 7 blood in Ksuvos, that have this many Shas sugyas. It's like half of my brother Sefer is mamish on these 6 or 7 blood. Is really just an incredible limud. So we're going to spend some time in this. So the yesterday we discussed Ein Shas Hadchak Raya, and just to narrow the discussion down a lot, we discussed the Machlokas Rambam and the Ravid. Primarily, that was our point yesterday, that when the Gemara had said that Rabbi Yehuda was trying to prove that a lulav hayavish is kasher, he says, after all, the B'nai Krachin were morish the lulavim to B'nai Ben'ahem, to their grandchildren, which, by the way, is a good maramakam. I don't know if Rabbi Levin quoted it for his shir last week about B'nai Banim marrying Kabanim, about grandchildren, right? They're morish to the grandchildren, they're morish the lulavim to their grandchildren, and you see clearly they were using dried out lulavim for the mitzvah. So the Rabbanim responded, no, of course they used dried out lulavim over there because that was a shas avchak, ain shas avchak raya. So we had a fundamental machlokas Rambam. The Ravid had to understand that Gemara. The Rambam understands that the Rabbanim hold that normally a lulav hayavish is possible, but b'shas avchak it becomes kosher. B'shas avchak you're allowed to use a lulav hayavish. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda was trying to bring a raya, that it's always kasher. The Rabbanan said, no, not always, only b'shas avchak. The obvious problem with the Rambam that the Ravid raises is that the word pasul usually means pasul. It does not usually mean sometimes pasul, or pasul but negotiable, we'll figure something out. No, pasul means pasul. So how could you say that if it's a shas avchak, we're gonna let it go? That was the major kasha the Ravid asks in the Rambam. So the Ravid says that's not at all what's going on in the Gemara over here. What's going on in the Gemara, says the Ravid, is that b'shas avchak, of course you can't really be yotze the mitzvah with a lulav hayavish. It's possible. It's always possible. B'shas avchak, they recommended using a lulav hayavish because you might as well, just to keep the tradition alive, shalot tishtakach toras lulav, so that people don't forget that there is a din that you're supposed to have a lulav. So that's why they recommended using a lulav hayavish. That was the idea of the Ravid. How did the Ravid read the Gemara? So Rabbi Yehuda tries to bring a raya. You see that they used lulavim, that they were morish lulavim, so you see lulav hayavesh is kasher. And the Rabbanan responded, no, they didn't actually, weren't actually mekayim the mitzvah with the lulav hayavesh. They just did it anyway for the sake of continuity, for the sake of continuing shalot tishtakach. The Gemara later pointed out, we don't do everything kedei shalot tishtakach. We don't completely destroy a mitzvah for the sake of shalot tishtakach. We're not going to take a rimon, we're not going to take a pomegranate in place of an esrog if you can't find any esrogim, because that will have very detrimental side effects of people then thinking that an esrog is really a rimon, that pri etz hadar is really a pomegranate. So we don't want people to think that, and therefore it's in our case of using a lulav yavish, when you have no other lulav, there are no such concerns. So now, what I want to focus on now is a couple of statements of the Ravid. One in the Ravid of Mishnah Torah, the Ravid that we saw yesterday, but a line of the Ravid that we didn't focus on so much yesterday, and also a statement of the Ravid that's quoted by other Rishonim, by the Ritva, the Ran, the Rashba, quoted by several other Rishonim. First, the Ravid in the Mishnah Torah. If you look back in source number 2, when the Ravid attacks the Rambam, and he says, come on, the word pasul means pasul, it means pasul midoraisa, it means that there's no way that it's ever going to be kosher, not even in a shas avchak. Then the last two lines he says, and as for the Gemara, ukisha amru lo, ein shas avchak raya. When the Gemara in Daf Sukkah Lamed Aleph says that the Rabbanan told Rabbi Yehuda, you cannot bring a raya from shas avchak, kach amru, linkot biyadayu kolduhu, ki hechi dulo lishtakach minayu mitzvas esrog. What they were saying was, you might as well have something just so that people don't forget that you're supposed to have Dalin Minim and the basic identity of the Dalin Minim, but not that you're actually Yotzei the Mitzvah. Basically, according to the Ravid, would you make a bracha b'shas avchak on a lulav hayavesh? Absolutely not. According to the Ravid, it's not a mitzvah. You're just doing it shalot tishtakach. V'Rabbi Yehuda lo heyid ella. Here's the line that I'm most interested in for right now. Rabbi Yehuda lo heyid ella shayu marishim lulaveim lebneihem v'lo amar shayu mevarchim alav. All Rabbi Yehuda was made about, his whole proof was, look, they were morish the lulavim. I didn't tell you what they did with the lulavim. If Rabbi Yehuda was able to be made, then not only did the grandchildren get the lulavim, but they used them and made a bracha. Had Rabbi Yehuda been able to tell Eidos like that, then the Rabbanan would have no response. Because according to the Ravid, the Rabbanan's response is, they weren't really doing the mitzvah, they were just doing it for fun, just doing it to keep the mitzvah alive. But they weren't really doing the mitzvah. So if Rabbi Yehuda had first had knowledge that they actually made a bracha, the Rabbanan would have been checkmate, you got us. Now according to the Rambam, even if Rabbi Yehuda's made that they made a bracha, the Rabbanan still respond, yeah, they made a bracha because it was a shas abchak, and b'shas abchak it's kosher. But according to the Ravid, b'shas abchak it's not kosher. B'shas abchak it's bad, it's pasul. So the Rabbanan would have no response to Rabbi Yehuda if Rabbi Yehuda's edus was that they actually used it for the mitzvah. All he was able to be made was that there was this Yerusha, that it went down to the grandchildren. So the Rabbanan's response is, don't give me that that's a raya, that a lulav yavish is kosher. They were morish them to the grandchildren, pashut, because they were morish to the grandchildren just to keep the remembrance of the mitzvah, kosher style, not because they're actually doing the mitzvah. Question? No? Okay. So that is what the Ravid tied is. Now, the Magen Mishnah quotes Ramban, who vehemently disagrees with this Ravid. The Ramban's basic point is, Rabbi Yehuda is trying to bring a raya that Lulav Yavish is kosher, and he says, don't you see there was a Yerusha that went down with Lulavim? So says Ramban, what would Rabbi Yehuda's have in him? The fact that you were Morish Lulavim, and you know what else they were Morish to their children? They were probably Morish clothing to their children. They were probably Morish houseware utensils. That means everything they're Morish to their children has to be used for a mitzvah? There are other uses for a lulav. You could use a lulav as a broom, you could use it as a toy sword, I don't know, you could use it for other things. What's Rabbi Yehuda bring? Just that there was a Yerusha? That was his whole raya? That there was a Yerusha? Whatever is in your possession is a Yerusha. You don't even have a choice. When a person dies, they're a dinim of Yerusha. They kick in. So the Ramban says, I don't understand what the Ravid's talking about. Rabbi Yehuda's bringing a raya. Oh, there was a Yerusha. It must be tzkasha for the mitzvah. No, the Rambam makes more sense. Not just that there was a Yerusha, but that there were Morish and the grandchildren used it for the mitzvah with the bracha. That we actually have first-hand knowledge that they mamish used it for the mitzvah. That was the Eidos. Not just that they were Morish. Morish won't prove anything. So the Ramban says he rejects this Ravid. He doesn't understand how that Ravid can possibly work. We shouldn't just leave it at that, because l'chora, there's a third possibility. I mean, the Rambam says, what was Rabbi Yehuda's raya? Rabbi Yehuda's raya is, they were morish to love him, and what did the grandchildren do? According to the Rambam? What did they do? No. They used it with a bracha, right? The Ravid's raya is, no, all they did is morish. I have no idea what happened to it after that. There's another possibility. Rabbi Yehuda might have known that they were morish to the grandchildren, and the grandchildren used it in the context of Dalam Minim, but maybe he didn't have details about the bracha. He didn't know about the bracha. Right? Rabbi Yehuda knew that they were Morish Lulavim to the grandchildren. Why else would you really be Morish Lulavim other than to use it for the mitzvah? And he knew that they used it for the mitzvah. The grandchildren used it for the mitzvah. And the grandparents kept it around, dafka to be Morish, so that the grandkids can use it for the mitzvah. But do I know if they made a bracha? They didn't make a bracha. I have no record of that. But Rabbi Yehuda's bring right. You see, they use it for the mitzvah. At least it must be that it's something. It must be that it's kosher. And the Rabbi would say, no, you're right, they used it for the mitzvah, but that wasn't really the mitzvah, that was just keeping the mitzvah alive. Right? Why does the Ramban not see that as what the Ravid might really be saying? I mean, the Ramban takes the Ravid, I think, it seems like a little too literally. The Ravid says, his only raya is that they were morish. That doesn't mean that Dina Yerusha kicked in. The Ravid was saying that Rabbi Yehuda's only raya is that they were Morish and they used it, but not that they actually made a bracha. He didn't know it, the details about the bracha. That would have, it seems to me, that would have been a much, much more simple understanding of the Ravid. So I don't really know. I don't have a good explanation of why the Ramban attacks the Ravid so strongly. I think he's being overly literal in the understanding of the Ravid. The Ravid the Rabbi does not understand Rabbi Yehuda's raya just that they were Modish, but that they were Modish and he doesn't know anything about the bracha. That they were Modish and they did use it for a mitzvah, he just doesn't know anything about the bracha. Because his proof was they used it for a mitzvah. They used it for a mitzvah. I don't know if they made a bracha on it, but why else would you... Look, if you don't have an esrog, you don't take a pomegranate. So if you don't have a moist lulav, why would you take a dry lulav if not for the fact that it's kosher? It must be that it's kosher. And Rabbi Yehuda assumed they must have made a bracha. He didn't have a clear record that they did, but he assumed if they were taking it, they probably made a bracha. That Rabbi Yehuda's point is, yeah, that it's completely kosher to use lulav for yavesh, and the Rabbanan respond, no, it's not. They were only doing it to keep the tradition alive, but not because it was actually kosher for the mitzvah. That is the that last point of the Rabbi that I wanted to touch on. I just realized I skipped out on what we mentioned yesterday. We mentioned yesterday that the Rush had this unbelievable line that we asked that according to the Rabbi. Ravid asks on the Rama, pasul always means pasul lagamri. It never means that it's iffy and that shasad chak is going to be okay. So to defend the Rambam, the Rush had this one line where the Rush says, "L'masna kasav el chachamim," that the Torah was given over to the chachamim to interpret what they want to interpret in it, and therefore the chachamim wanted to define hadar one way. They could define hadar one way when it's shasad chak, one way when it's not shasad chak. The Rabban could do whatever they want. And therefore, the Rabban could tell you that Ulul Vayavish is Kashub Shasad Chak. That's how the Rush defended the Rambam. So we pointed out that Lomasra Kasav Al Chacham is a very difficult concept. The Chacham Tzvi pointed out in the Tshuva, it's a very difficult concept to apply indiscriminately. To take any Dindar Raisa and just say, yeah, Lomasra Kasav Al Chacham is a very difficult thing to do. In order to explain what he meant by that, so the Chacham Tzvi suggests maybe what he means is as follows. That we're talking about the mitzvah of lulav on days 2 through 7. Days 2 through 7, the mitzvah of lulav outside of the mikdash is only a mitzvah mitrabanan anyway. So for that, for sure, it's up to the Chacham to determine what's a kashrut lulav, what's a pasul lulav. So the Rabbanan wanted to determine on days 2 through 7 when it's not shasad chak, yavish is pasul, and when it is shasad chak, yavish is kashrut, because they have every right to do that. And then the Chacham Tzvi said, and if they can say that about days 2 through 7, then maybe that's enough of a reason for the Chacham to allow you to make a bracha on day 1 also. And that's what we closed with yesterday. The idea that when the Chachamim were misaking, that you take a lulav, Zeicha LeMikdash, days 2 through 7, so we had that Chakira. Were they misaking that you take a lulav, Zeicha LeMikdash, for all 7 days, including day 1? Even though you're already taking it anyway, day 1 for the mitzvah d'oraisa, but on top of that, there's also gzeirah mitrabanan, takana mitrabanan, or the rabbanan only added days 2 through 7, but they kept day 1 as purely a d'oraisa. If you understand the former way that they were gozer for all 7 days, then the Chacham Tzvi says it's possible that if you can make a bracha on a dry lulav b'shas hachak days 2 through 7. Then you can make a bracha on a dry lulav b'shas hachak day 1 also. Not because you're being yotzei the mitzvah d'oraisa, you're not. The mitzvah d'oraisa you don't have. But the mitzvah d'rabbanan at least you have. Chacham Tzvi didn't say it exactly in those words. If you had a chance to look at the Chacham Tzvi, the words he used were slightly different, and he might not even be saying exactly what I'm saying. The words he used were, come on, you can't make days 2 through 7 more of a mitzvah than day 1. Then how could you have days 2 through 7 where you're going to take a lulav and make a bracha? Day 1 you're not going to make a bracha. Can't be. So if you make a bracha 2 through 7, you make a bracha day 1. I just tried to give a little bit of svara to it by saying that lambdas, because I don't understand what that means. If there's no mitzvah on day 1, so how could you make a bracha? There is a mitzvah days 2 through 7, and I didn't really. So I thought what the Chacham Tzvi meant is that if they made a takana days 2 through 7, they wouldn't have just made the takana to only apply days 2 through 7. They made the takana for all 7 days. And we connected that to the to Rav Shechter's piece with the Mishnah Yaakov about being in the old city on the first day after taking lulav outside. Fine, that's the basic chakira. Says the Chacham Tzvi. If you take a look in source number 8, this is the part we didn't get to because we raised another question yesterday. Eitan was just asking me on the way down. We raised another question yesterday also that when the Rush was explaining the Shitas Haravid. So what was the Shitas Ravid? That a dried out lulav is pasul, completely pasul, it's absolutely no good, it's like taking nothing, it's absolutely no good, even b'shas hachak, right? So the Ravid's raya number one is, come on, puzzle. Puzzle means puzzle. And then he says, plus, it's dried out. It's dead. There's no way you could do a mitzvah with something like that. He doesn't use the expression, but sometimes we would use the expression, lo ha-mesim yahaluluka. Mesim, a dried out lulav, is a dead lulav. You can't use that as a mitzvah for the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's pashut with svara. So we raise the question, what do you need that second svara for? The Ravid tells us the first one. Why does the Rush add that second svara? It might be b'shem the Ravid in some other sefer of the Ravid, I'm not sure. But why does he add, what do we need that second svara for? So if you take a look at Chacham Tzvi, he deals with this issue. Chacham Tzvi, about 20 lines in source number 8, he says, v'adayin yesh lomar, d'lo samach ha-Ravid ha-maydik tani pasul l'chud, elo b'tziruf ha-svara da-yaveh shu k'meis. The Ravid was not satisfied with just the fact that it says pasul, and therefore that must mean it's always pasul. The Ravid needed this additional svara that a yavish is like a mace. Ivra dila svara dila el ein lashon pasul machria divadai min haTorah pasul hu afilu b'dieved ela d'midrabanan michayev hecha delaka kasher. So says the Chacham Tzvi so beautifully. He says, how did I just defend the Rambam? I told you that the Rambam will say, of course it's pasul midaraisa. Why did they take lulav with the bracha according to the Rambam? Because at least there's a kiyum mitzvah midrabanan. So what's the Rambam going to answer to the Ravid's kasha pasul? The Rambam will say, yes, pasul, you're right, it's even pasul mishaschak midaraisa. But what about the mitzvah midrabanan? The mitzvah midrabanan they can still do, and that the Rabbanan have the right to determine. You can make a bracha on even if it's yavesh, because the Rabbanan determined the gedarim of a mitzvah midrabanan. That's how the Rambam would defend himself. What's the Ravid's counterpunch? How's the Ravid going to respond to that? It's a good svara, no? If there's a mitzvah midrabanan, the Rabbanan has the right to tell you to make a bracha. So says the Chacham Tzvi, that's why the Rush throws in that extra svara. The Ravid's counterpunch is, even for mitzvahs midrabanan, you can't use things that are dead. Dead things can't be used for a mitzvah. So you're right, the Lashon Pasul, okay, you have a teretz to that. You have a teretz that pasul is only on a doraisa level, but we're talking about a mitzvah drabbanan, special takana, lulav nitzal b'medina kol shiva. Fine, that's special takana midrabanan. And for that you make a brachan. But yeah, you answer that question. What about the fact that it's yavish, and yavish is just dead? So he says, that's why the Ravid adds in that second svara. He says, pasul afil b'el midrabanan michayi v'echad l'akasha afshav yom rishon lo tzrachon lo takana skamish rei minatoru chayi mikal bakom. The Rambam seems to assume they made a bracha even on day one. The Rambam that you would make a bracha, and that's what the second svara is coming to address. That's how the Chacham Tzvi understands that, puts it all together. He understands the Rush's defense of the Rambam that Masra Kasav Chachamim doesn't mean that the Chachamim changed the dinim. It means that we're dealing with the din derabanan over here. And why does the Ravid need the second svara to counterpoint the Rambam's defense for himself? Now the Chacham Tzvi is very creative. There's a lot there that doesn't actually say in the words, but he made this whole battle, this whole back and forth, when out of the words of the Rambam and the Ravid, when they didn't express it in such a way. Divrei Malkiel, I included a little biography because I had no idea who he was, so I figured if I don't know who he was, probably some of you don't know who he was either. It's quoted all the time. It's apparently a well-known sefer. The Chacham Tzvi, in case you don't know who he was, the Shechter was always mocked to tell you who people are when he quoted. Chacham Tzvi was the father of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. He was known as one of the greatest poskim of his time. He was the Rav of Altena, I believe, and his son Rabbi Yaakov Emden wanted very much to be the Rav of Altena, but it was the job was given to Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz instead. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz had a little, more than a little, they had some issues with each other, and it caused great, great problems in Jewish history, but that's a different discussion for a different time. Maybe we should have a Jewish history vod or something, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden was, the Chacham Tzvi was a very well-known posek, father of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Okay. Chacham Tzvi's most famous tshuva probably is the Golem tshuva, where you can be mitzari for Golem to a minion. It's a great example in halacha of how something that you think is totally irrelevant comes to relevance. whether a golem has a din of a human being. So now, when the, in all these bioethics discussions of I don't even know the medical terminology, but when they make babies outside in a petri dish, not in vitro fertilization, but when they do the cloning, things like that, right? All these discussions. So they go back to that tshuva and say, what if you have a baby that's not made by man, woman, tashra shamita? You're just taking genes and, you know, DNA and just like making a person out of it. So is that a din of a golem? Right? It's Frankenstein. That's, you know, you're making a human being. So anyway, but that's a different. That's just like the most famous tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi, I think. The Divrei Malkiel has a totally different yishuv for the Rambam. Divrei Malkiel quotes this Machlokas Rambam the Ravid, and he points out the Ravid's problem of puzzle. So he says it could be that what the Rush means when he says that lo masran kasal chachamim is that, what does the word hadar mean? Hadar means beautiful, right? So he doesn't say it in exactly these words, but he says there's a famous statement. This famous saying, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. If I were to take my computer, my laptop computer that's, you know, a couple of keys are loose because my daughter pulled out a couple of the keys, and, you know, it's not the best computer, it's a Dell, it's not a Mac, you know, it's not. And I were to go into a time machine and bring it back 30 years, 35 years ago, where the only computer in the world was was about the size of this room in the IBM offices somewhere. And I would show someone that computer, they would say it's the most beautiful thing they've ever seen. But nowadays, you know, it doesn't really appear to be so beautiful. So he says, hadar by definition is a relative term. And therefore, l'masran kasvul l'cham means the cham have the right to determine what's called hadar. Who says that yavesh isn't hadar? Yavesh isn't hadar when there are other lulavim around. And there are lulavim that are actually nicer. But if that's the only lulav you got, so then it's the most beautiful thing in the world. If you only have, like, people in Russia, they had one pair of tefillin that they saved for generations or whatever, and they couldn't find tefillin within miles or whatever. So that pair of tefillin might have been the ugliest tefillin in the world. It was the most beautiful tefillin in the world to them. So that's the definition of hadar. So that's what it means, l'mashan kasav al chachamim. Clearly, hadar is din d'oraisa. But exactly how to define hadar depends on the circumstances. It depends on the context. And he says, I'll bring you a raya. The Gemara says in Lamed Vav that Esrog Kushi is going to be kosher in Kush. That an Esrog HaKushi, an Esrog that's totally discolored because it comes from Kush, is kosher in that place. Bring it somewhere else and it's possible, because it's not Hadar anywhere else. So you see clearly, Hadar is a relative term. If that's the way Esrogim look there, and that's, you know, what a beautiful Esrog is, so that's good. That's good enough for Hadar. But bring it somewhere else where you don't have any other options, and then all of a sudden it's not good enough for Hadar. Yeah.
Yeah, but Yavish isn't a variation of an Esrog, though. Like, a Kushi Esrog is a variation of an Esrog. So, but like Yavish, like, that can be found anywhere, so wherever you pick, you know, they'll understand that Yavish is, you know...
Yeah, so he raises that point, and he says that's what the Ravid would say. It says, "Va'arayvid yeshlom adisrile dinihida abahakrivei u'na yeshom tali shaper minagam malkum kanal linyan hadar ain't shayich chalik bein amakomos." By hadar, it doesn't depend on the place. What about Kushi? Kivin d'sham gidulo shayni. So it grows that way there. So that's got to be different. That's how the Ravid would say. So he would say that's the machlokes Rambam Ravid. That's how the different Malkiel understands. But that was all in yesterday's Ravid. Now there's a second Ravid. And this Ravid does not appear in his comment on the Rambam. This Ravid appears in several other Rishonim. If you look in the Ritva on the Sugya, and the Ran in the back of the Gemara, on Daf Yudalad Amad Aleph Bedapei Arif, I think it is. Yeah, the Ran on Daf Yudalad Amad Aleph Bedapei Arif, I think it's in the Mar Makomos also. Yeah, it's in source number 10. But they quote another Ravid. What about a Lulav Hayavesh on Yom Tov Sheni? We pass it in about a Lulav Hayavesh puzzle, Yom Tov Rishon. What about a Lulav Hayavesh on Yom Tov Sheni? So the Ravid says, I have a raya that a Lulav Hayavesh is puzzle even be Yom Tov Sheni. What's my raya? He quotes from Rabbeinu Menachem Bar Yitzchak that the conversation in our Gemara between the Rabban and Rabbi Yehuda with the Morish Lulavayim Lebnei Bneihem is a raya that a lulav hayavish is possible even beyond Yom Tov Sheni. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, look, they were Maurish, it must be good. And the Rabbanan said, no, that was just for Shas Adchak. Why didn't the Rabbanan say better? The Rabbanan could have said, it's not good on Yom Tov Rishon. Yom Tov Sheni, that's why they were Maurish. They were Maurish so that the kids could have it for Yom Tov Sheni. And Yom Tov Sheni, we all agree it's kosher. The Rabbanan will agree it's kosher too, Yom Tov Sheni. Why didn't the Rabbanan say that? They were Moda, Yom Tov Sheni, it's good. And that's why they were Morish. That explains the Morish without having come on to the Shas Adchak idea. So the Rabbi says, from the fact that that was not the response of the Rabbanan didn't say anything about Yom Tov Sheni. They just said, no, Shas Adchak is different. It's a raya that Yom Tov Sheni would still be possible. Yeah.
Why would they answer Yom Tov Sheni?
Why should they say Yom Tov Sheni? If Yom Tov Sheni, in fact, was kosher to use a Yavesh, so that would have been the better answer. You know why they were Morish? They were Morish for Yom Tov Sheni, when it's actually kosher to use Yavesh. Now, this Raya of the Raya is the Raya of the Shitasa. This Raya only works. Why is it better to say Yom Tov Sheni than to say Shas Adchak? Meaning, if you're going to say, I should have said this answer and not that answer, that only makes sense if the answer that you should have said is a better answer. Right? Why is it better to say Yom Tov Sheni? Because according to the Raya, when they're saying Shas Adchak, what are they in effect saying? It was a waste of time, really. You know, the fact that they took a lulav and it was dry didn't really accomplish anything. They didn't get the mitzvah anyhow. It was just to keep the idea alive. It was the kosher style lulav, but there was no kiyum mitzvah anyway. So says the Ravid, if there's a way that there could have been some sort of kiyum mitzvah, then the Rabbanan should have pointed to that. Right? On Yom Tov Sheni, there's some sort of kiyum mitzvah. It's kosher on Yom Tov Sheni. There's a kiyum mitzvah. The Rabbanan should have said, no, they were mourish it for a real kiyum mitzvah. You're right, but it was Yom Tov Sheni. But if you hold like the Rambam, the Shas Adchak is telling you that there was a Kiyum HaMitzvah anyway. According to the Rambam, Shas Adchak means that B'Shas Adchak, Taka becomes kosher. You're allowed to use Lul V'Yavish, Yom Tov Rishon, Yom Tov Sheni, whatever. It really becomes kosher. So you don't have a kasha, why didn't they say Yom Tov Sheni? They didn't say Yom Tov Sheni because it's no better an answer than saying Shas Adchak. Shas Adchak also makes it a kosher Chavtza Shal Mitzvah. You don't have to rely on Yom Tov Sheni to make it a kosher Chavtza Shal Mitzvah. So this whole raya of the Ravid is Ravid Lishitasa. That's what the Ravid's saying. That's this Ravid about Yom Tov Sheni bringing a raya that Yom Tov Sheni, it's got to be that it's puzzle. Because otherwise, why didn't the Rabbanan just say that the reason they were Morish was Yom Tov Sheni? So El Shmamina, Shayavish, Shayichacham, Pulsin, also Kol Shiva. The Chum would have puzzled Kol Shiva Yom Tov Sheni also. Now, Yoruch Lener I didn't put this Yoruch Lener in the Mar Makomos. I think I should say the Yoruch Lener is a strange vart. I didn't like it, but I guess I'll just say it, tell you why I didn't like it. Maybe you'll tell me why I should like it. The Yoruch Lener says what's the point of being Morish them something for Yom Tov Sheni? Meaning Mimanafshach. If it's going to be kosher on Yom Tov Rishon also, if the Lulav Yavesh were kosher on Yom Tov Rishon, then they should be Morish for Yom Tov Rishon. If it's not kosher on Yom Tov Rishon, well then the grandchildren are going to need to come up with some other solution for Yom Tov Rishon anyway. So why would you be Morish on the dried out Lulav? Whatever they use on Yom Tov Rishon, they should use on Yom Tov Sheni. Because if the Lulav Yavesh is not kosher on Yom Tov Rishon, they're not going to be able to use the Yom Tov Rishon. Right? And if they're not going to be able to use the Yom Tov Rishon, they must come up with some other solution. So whatever solution they come up with for Yom Tov Rishon, they should just apply that and use that lula for Yom Tov Sheni instead of using the Zayda's lula for Yom Tov Sheni. I understand what he's talking about because I assume what they were being murdered for was that there's not going to be an alternate solution. You're just not going to have anything on Yom Tov Rishon. And yes, these Lulavay, at least we'll be able to do some sort of mitzvah on Yom Tov Sheni with the Lulavay Yavish. I didn't really understand, I just thought I'd say it over just in case maybe someone saw the Yoruch Lener had a better understanding. But anyway, you can forget the Yoruch, I mean, whatever. Ravid's Raya, back home. Ravid's Raya, must be that Yom Tov Sheni, Lulavay Yavish is possible in Yom Tov Sheni. Must be Lulavay Yavish is possible in Yom Tov Sheni, because otherwise the Chum would have said that's why they were Morish. Says the Ramban, I don't like that Raya at all. Ramban zal docha raya zu. Va'amar, and he says, "Devadai Rabbi Yehuda lo mina Yerusha hevi raya l'dvarav." The Ramban rejects this, and Ramban says that the raya was not the fact that they were morish to their grandchildren. Shaharei nachla mimashmeshes at sof kaladoros. This is the Ramban that the Magen Mishnah quoted, but we quoted it in a different context before. We quoted it in a different raivid. The Ramban says there was no raya from the fact that there was a Yerusha. If the raya was from the fact that there was a Yerusha, you're right. Then the Chacham could have responded, no, maybe they were only Morishin for Yom Tov Sheni. The Ramban says, you can't bring proof to anything from the fact that there was a Yerusha. There's always Yerusha. Yerusha just means that you owned something and died. It doesn't imply any sort of kiyum mitzvah of any sort, just the fact that you owned something and died. What's the raya? The raya must have been that Rabbi Yehuda had specific information, not just that these grandchildren yarshin the lulav hayavesh, but that they then used it for the mitzvah. And that was Rabbi Yehuda's raya. Maybe the reason the Rabbanan didn't respond, oh, the Yerusha was only so that they could use it in Yom Tov Sheni, maybe it's because Rabbi Yehuda actually had specific information that they used it on Yom Tov Rishon. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda's raya was not just, al korchach, the Ramban says, Rabbi Yehuda's raya was not just stam that they yarshin the lulav. It must have been more specific than that. Because the fact that you yarshin something just proves that you died. It doesn't prove anything else. There are people that die all the time with the lulav in their house. There are people right now that have lulavim in their homes and die. And their children therefore have a lulav, hayavish. That proves nothing about a lulav hayavish. Right? We can be masking to that. That proves nothing about a lulav hayavish. That's Ramban's point. The raya of Yudabro could not have been that there was such a thing as Yerusha of a lulav. The raya must have been that he had some specific information of what they did with this lulav hayavish. So what taka did they do with this lulav hayavish? Maybe Rabbi Yehuda's raya was that he had specific information that they used it on Yom Tov Rishon. And if that was his raya, then that's why the Rabbanu couldn't respond, oh no, maybe it was just for Yom Tov Sheni that they actually did. No, Rabbi Yehuda must have had specific information about Yom Tov Rishon. He just wasn't sure about the bracha or not. But he had specific information about Yom Tov Rishon. And to that, the Rabbanu have no response of Yom Tov Sheni. They have to respond, in Shasim Chak Raya. That's how I understood the Ramban. You look in the words to see if you understood it the same way. But that's how I understood the Ramban. The Ramban rejects the raya of the Raivid. How's the Raivid, this taina that we said over twice already from the Ramban, that Yerusha isn't a raya to anything, how did the Raivid respond? Now, the first Raivid we said before, the Raivid might respond, no, he doesn't think the raya is from the Yerusha, he thought that they actually had specific information that they used it, just that he didn't know if they made a bracha. It's not going to work over here. For the Raivid to bring a raya, that why didn't the Rabbanan respond, that maybe they only yashin for Yom Tov Sheni, implies that when Rabbi Yehuda brought this raya, that, oh, they were Moshe Lulavim, it means Rabbi Yehuda had no idea what they did with the Lulavim. And the Rabbanan respond, yeah, they were Moshe Lulavim, but they just used the Yom Tov Sheni. Rabbi Yehuda had no clue what they were doing with the Lulavim. So the way the Raivid understands Rabbi Yehuda's raya is, there was a Yerusha. How does that prove anything, the fact that there was Yerusha? So the Ran, in defense of the Raivid, says maybe the fact that there is a Yerusha is a little bit of a proof to something. Because, what do you do with your lulav when Sukkot is over? Okay, so some people save it and use it to burn chametz, right? Once you do one mitzvah, it's nice to do another mitzvah with it. But most people, or a lot of people take the lulav, put it in a garbage bag and throw it out. Why would you keep a lulav around? What would be your motivation to keep a lulav around? To use it as a broom or whatever? It's a possibility, that's what the Ramban says, maybe to use it as a broom. There are better brooms than lulav. You don't need to keep a lulav around, your kids will find a better broom. It must be, if they were keeping the lulav around, they must have had some mitzvah intention for it. The fact that they had it around long enough to yarshin to their children, and it sounds like it wasn't just guys who died on Sukkot. We're talking about this was the minig, the B'nai Krachin, this is what they would always do. The grandchildren always knew they could rely on the Yerusha, the Zaydus Lulav. So the fact that they would keep it around to yashin the children, that itself is the raya that Rabbi Yehuda brings. Rabbi Yehuda had no idea what they did with it once they yashined it, but he knew that they yashined it. And that itself he thought was enough of a raya. Yeah. Okay, so that's what the Ramban's saying is. Maybe they were yarshin it over for it to use as a broom, like any other household utensil. Which is also an interesting point, because that assumes that you're allowed to use it as a broom. That a lulav that you use for a mitzvah, you're allowed to use as a broom. That's not so pashut either. Meaning, I pointed out in the past, one of the common questions I get after Sukkot, every year, people call me up and they say, what do I do with my lulav? How do I get rid of the lulav? So the answer is, there's two types of things, Tashmisha Kedusha and Tashmisha Mitzvah. If they ask me, how do I get rid of my tefillin, my old tefillin, so I wouldn't tell them just wrap it in a bag and throw it in the garbage, you would say you have to put it in Shemitz, right? But a lulav, it's not Tashmisha Kedusha, it's Tashmisha Mitzvah, it doesn't have any Ksav Shel Torah on it, so as long as you throw it away in a respectful fashion. Can you throw it in with last night's chicken bones and whatever? No, that you shouldn't do. It should be in a separate bag, respectfully, throw it away. Can you use it for a tashmish habazur? Let's say I want to sweep the floor from last night's chicken bones or whatever, a cereal that my kids spilled on the floor. Can I use a lulav for something like that? So the Ramban is clearly assuming that I can. Because the Ramban is saying maybe they yarshin their lulavim to their grandchildren, not so that they could have it for lulavim, but that they could have it for a broom. Who told them they're allowed to use it as a broom? The assumption of the Ramban seems that you're allowed to use something that was used as a chefzah shel mitzvah, lachas man mitzvah, so for a tashmish habazur. It's against Shulchan Aruch. We don't assume that way. We assume that you're not allowed to use, I think the Shulchan Aruch, what does Shulchan Aruch say? What is that? I put it in here. Yesh misha omer, shoshana shabluv, alfa pisha nizrekes, ein lufsoa alav. Shulchan Aruch quotes, yesh misha omer, I don't think he quotes a cholik, that even though you're allowed to throw away your lulav after Sukkot, you're not allowed to step on it. You're not allowed to step in it, you're not allowed to use it as a broom either. You're not allowed to be mevazit. You're not allowed to do something that's a bizayon to it. So the Ramban is clearly assuming not that way. You could say that plays a role in this machlokas also. Right? The Ravid will say, well, what else are they being morish their loving to their children for? They can't use it as a broom. And the Ramban will say, who says they can't? Yes, they can. So they might be arguing about using tashmisha mitzvah, lachas man mitzvah son, for tashmish bazoi. That might be part of the machlokas. Okay, that is section one. That is sugya number one over here. Sugya number one of Ein Shasat Chak Raya. Now, sugya number two. The Gemara, back in the Gemara, Lamed Aleph and Beis. The Gemara says, Lulav shel avodah zarah v'shel ira nidachas. So we said, Lulav shel avodah zarah v'shel ira nidachas. Shel asher v'shel ira nidachas. Is pasul, right? So says the Gemara. The Mishnah said it's pasul. So says the Gemara, v'shal asher pasul. Four lines on the bottom of the page. Is lulav shal asher really pasul? V'ha'amar Rava lulav shal avodah zarah lo yitol v'imnatol kasher. But didn't Rava say that? I'm skipping, by the way, the size of the minimum shear thing and the poser and all that stuff. And there's nice toast in there, but whatever. There's only so much we could do. So Vam Rav Luv Shal Vodzar Lo Yitol Vimnatal Kasher. Didn't Rav say Luv Shal Vodzar, you're not supposed to take, but if you do take it, it's kasher. How could you tell me it's possible? So Hachav Asher de Moshe Askinah de Ketuzim Mech Lashirah. No, it's only possible when you're dealing with Asher de Moshe, where there's a mitzvah to be soreif, there's a mitzvah to burn it. The Asher trees that were in Eretz Yisrael, when we came in, the Torah says, you go into Eretz Yisrael, Asherim Tisrufun Be'ez, burn down the Asher trees. You have to burn down the asher trees, ki'ilu, they're burnt already, it's as if they're chopped up into little pieces, so you never have a shear, it's a din shear. But in terms of getting hana'ah from avodah zarah, it's okay to be yotzi the mitzvah with the lulav shel asherah. Regular asherah, regular lulav shel avodah zarah, it's okay to be yotzi the mitzvah, even though you're not allowed to get hana'ah from avodah zarah. Why is it okay to be yotzi the mitzvah, even though you're not allowed to get hana'ah from avodah zarah? Isn't being yotzi the mitzvah a gishmaka hana'ah? Doesn't it feel great to be yotzi mitzvahs, to feel connected to the Ribbono shel Olam? So says Rashi, mitzvos lavli hanos nitnu. No, the hana'ah that you get from a mitzvah is not called hana'ah. That is a huge statement. Primary sugya Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Ches, that the Hana you get from a mitzvah is not called Hana. Several questions need to be asked. Number one, why? It feels good, why is that not called Hana? Sometimes spiritual pleasure or metaphysical pleasure is greater than physical pleasure. I might get pleasure from eating an ice cream cone, I get much more pleasure sleeping in the sukkah. I just love sleeping in the sukkah until I wake up the next morning with a cold and bug bites. But like when I'm first going to sleep, like it's very pleasurable, very enjoyable. So why is that not called hana, but eating the ice cream cone is called hana? That's one. Two, what if the mitzvah actually doesn't just give me spiritual pleasure, it also gives me physical pleasure? Let's say I like matzah. Really like it. So it's actual physical pleasure. So you're going to say, that's not called hana? Mitzvah's lovely hana, didn't you? Or let's say it's a hot summer day, and going to the Ariz Mikvah is exactly what I need. I just need to cool off. You say, Mitzvah's lovely hana? I'm getting hana. Not just, yeah, I feel so holy, whatever, you know. No, forget about the holiness. I'm a litvak. I don't feel any holiness in the mikvah. I feel cold. That's hana. So is that, are you going to say Mrs. Lavley or something like that also? Then there are a whole bunch of side issues as well. What about Mitzvah Drabbanan? Would we say Mitzvah Drabbanan is also not called hana? So there's a lot to discuss in the sugya of Mrs. Lavley Hanasidu. Now, a good place to start is Rashi, over here. Because Rashi gives a little bit of a hezber for Mitzvah Slavli Hanasidu. Says Rashi, V'yimnatal kasher, V'yafagav d'yisurei hana'ahu, even though it's yisurei hana'ah, still it's okay to use it for your mitzvah of lulav, the Mitzvah Slavli Hanasidu, kilomar. So he starts, he's giving us an explanation. Ein kiyum mitzvos hana'as haguf, ela avodas eved l'rabo. If only we knew what that meant, right? What does he mean by that? He says, I'm explaining to you, Mitzvah Slavli Hanasin, why is it that the geshmak I get from sleeping in the sukkah is not called hana'a? Because kiyum mitzvos are not hana'as haguf, ela avodas eved l'rabo. Any ideas? Yeah. Okay. Let me. Good. Rashi is probably dealing with two of the questions that I raised. You're answering the second. I really wanted to focus on the first. Meaning, I raised the question: why is the geshmak I get not the physical geshmak, the geshmak of the spiritual geshmak of being in the sun? It's just I feel so close to the Baruch Shalom. I feel in the Sila Dimnusa. The geshmak of a kiyum mitzvah. Why is that not called hana'ah? That's one question we asked. The other question is, what about the physical hana'ah I'm getting also? So you're answering that second question. What about the physical hana'ah? I'm saying, yeah, but it's tafel to the and. I mean, once you mention it, is that always going to be true? What about Pruravu? A person wouldn't engage in Tashmish Hamita if not for wanting to have children, if not for wanting to do the mitzvah of having children, right? There's many years of human history to prove otherwise. So, but I wanted to focus more on the first question. Why is the physical, why is the spiritual pleasure not called hana'ah? What makes it not called hana'ah? So Rashi probably is dealing with that. What does he say? Ein kiyum mitzvos hana'as haguf, ela avodas eved l'rabo. I saw two hesberim. I think they were both quoted in my brother Sefer. One was from the Dibros Moshe, was definitely quoted in my brother Sefer, because I would never find the Dibros Moshe on my own. And the other is from the Chassam Sofer. My brother quoted the wrong passage in the Chassam. He quoted like a watered down version. The Chassam Sofer says it a few places in Shas. He quoted from the Chassam Sofer in Chulin. The Chassam Sofer here in Sukkah is much better, much stronger in the Hesbin. Rav Moshe emphasizes the words Avodas Eved. avodas eved, that the hana you're getting from a mitzvah is not really hana. It says if you're getting too much hana from a mitzvah, you're not emphasizing the right part of the mitzvah. But Moshe writes in Dibros Moshe Nedarim, I think in Nedarim, I didn't put this in the Mar Makomos, but I have it in. I made another set of Mar Makomos on Mitzvah Lavli Hanos that I didn't print out for you. If you want, I'll leave it to you. But Rav Moshe in Nedarim Siman Tezvav, in Dibros Moshe Nedarim Siman Tezvav. Dibros Moshe was much harder than Igros Moshe, much longer, much more. Rav Moshe was much prouder of his Dibros Moshe than Igros Moshe, they say. Those were his Gemara Shiur. He was very into the Dibros Moshe. No one ever learns it though, because you need like 20 hours to really break your head to understand the Dibros Moshe. Very pilpul, back and forth, cheshbon, very, very long pieces. So in Dibros Moshe, but there's a new volume of Igros Moshe coming out next week, by the way. Good idea. New ninth volume of Igros Moshe, he's still writing. Rav Moshe in the Dibros Moshe, Siman Tezvav, says as follows. The emphasis is on Avodas Eved. When you're doing a mitzvah, you know what the geshmak that you're feeling is? The geshmak that you're feeling is that God controls you and you are nothing but a servant to Him. And that's your rightful place in this universe. That's the geshmak. Rav Moshe says, if you could put your finger in it, why does it feel so good? It feels so good because you know your place. And you're an Eved. So he says, Be'etzem, that's not really Hana, because it's really just emphasizing your Avdus. It's a very non-Hasidic view of, you know, Rav Moshe is like, you know, when you balance Yira and Ava, Rav Moshe is clearly heavy on the Yira side. Whatever Ava you feel is just because you know that you're a nothing. And that the Ribbono Shel Olam totally controls you. So Rav Moshe reads this Rashi and emphasizes the words of Avodas Eved. One could have read this Rashi and emphasized a different word in the Rashi. And that is the word Haguf. That Hana'a, when we talk about Isurei Hana'a, maybe only means physical pleasures. Maybe when something's Asur B'Hana'a, you're allowed to get non-physical pleasures from it. Only physical pleasures are Asur. Don't downplay the Hana'a I get from doing a mitzvah. It's very chashuv, and it's a real Hana'a. It's not just that I'm Levin. Maybe you could argue, not like Rav Moshe, I feel connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's great, it's really super geshmak. But it's not technically halachically called Hana'a unless there's something physical about it. Only physical pleasures are technically called hana. That's another way you could have read that Rashi. Chassam Sofer, not in reading Rashi, I don't think, but Chassam Sofer has a very sharp vart. He says, I'll prove to you that the hana you get from a kiyum mitzvah can't be called hana in regards to an iser hana. Because let's say I have this lulav that's shalav odazara. So I'm going to say, oh, so geshmak, I'm getting the geshmak of doing the mitzvah with this lulav. That's my hana'a, right? You want a tiny, that's called hana'a, and that should be a violation. So if that's a violation of the yisra hana'a of the lulav, so what would the halacha be? What would the halacha tell me to do? The halacha would tell me, don't use that lulav! Stay away from that lulav! So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to fulfill the mitzvah's losasei of lo yidbak biyadcha ma'uma. Of not having any connection to an Avodah Zarah. And that's so geshmak too! So I'm going to have a geshmak from not taking the lulav. Miman of Shach, the lulav is giving me a geshmak. Whichever way you're going to go, it's going to give me a geshmak of being Mekayim a mitzvah. I'm either going to be Mekayim a mitzvah of lulav and get this great geshmak of doing a mitzvah say of lulav. Or you're going to tell me, no, that's hanah, you got to stay away from that. So then I'm going to get another hanah. The hanah of lo yidvak biyam chamuhum, a mitzvah also say, are also geshmak. So since either way, whatever we tell you to do, whatever the Torah tells you to do, you're going to feel a sense of hana, that can't come into the equation in terms of the Yisurei hana. Once you start defining the kiyum mitzvah as hana, you run into trouble. Because whenever you ask what the right thing to do is, you're going to do the right thing, and then that's going to be hana. So you're always going to get hana from Avodah Zarah. Anytime I don't get hana from Avodah Zarah, it would be a violation of getting hana from Avodah Zarah. Because I'm fulfilling the mitzvah, I'm not getting enough from Avodah Zarah. It can't be, that's just ridiculous. So obviously, says Chassam Sofer, that's why it has to be built into the system, that the geshmak of doing the will of God is not called hana from the Avodah Zarah. Yeah.
Is it kind of
just
a technical thing?
Yeah, it could be kind of a technical thing, or I was thinking maybe it's even more than that. And Rishonim say this way, what I'm about to say, we're not going to go through the Rishonim right now. There's a very important Ran in the Dharam Daf Tesva, very important Rashba there. Maybe we'll discuss a little bit tomorrow. Anyone say Gemara Shia tomorrow? Do we have to take a vote? We barely have Gemara Shia this whole, like the last 2 weeks. I want to say Gemara Shia. I should take a vote. Whatever. I'll take a vote later. I'll text. Now you know I biased the vote a little bit. But okay. The other possibility is like this. Maybe see how to say this. Maybe what the Chassam Sofer means as follows. Hana'a of doing the right thing in the eyes of God is not hana'a from the object. The isser hana'a of lulav shel avod zarah is an isser to get pleasure from that lulav. How can I get pleasure from that lulav? I can use it to sweep my floor, I can use it whatever I want to use it for. But it's not pleasurable to me to hold the lulav. It's not something that I get pleasure out of, other than the fact that I'm connecting to God. The pleasure is not in the lulav, the pleasure is in the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that pleasure in the Ribbono Shel Olam, some just making the point, that can come in any form. It can come from not taking the lulav. Meaning that's just the raya, that the pleasure doesn't come from the lulav, that the pleasure comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Very similar to like the Meshech Chachma Lo Sasser that we said over a while ago. Right? That where the Meshech Chachma says that when, according to the Rambam, how could Lo Sasser be a Daraisa? Shouldn't we say every Darabban then becomes a Daraisa? The Meshech Chachma said no. It's just that God wants there to be a system where you listen to the rabbis. Every Din Darabban is not really, there's no mitzvah of lighting Ner Chanukah per se. The mitzvah is the Shema Divrei Chacham. That's the real mitzvah. It's just, Elamai, how do I do it by lighting Ner Chanukah? That's how the Meshech Chachma explained the Rambam, right? So you have a similar idea over here. Maybe what the Chassam Sofer is saying is, Hana'a, the Isra Hana'a is when there's an Isra Hana'a from the Chefta itself. When the Hana'a that I'm getting, the Isra Hana'a is when there's Hana'a from the Chefta itself. When the Hana'a that I'm getting is Michutz to Chefta, it's not really from the Lulav. It's from the fact that God doesn't want me to take the Lulav or does want me to take the Lulav. It's from listening to what God wants. So it's really the Hana'a is in the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Hana'a is not in the Lulav. Maybe that's not called Hana. And he's just using a cute way of saying that, like, you get the same Hana by not taking it when you're not supposed to. What does he mean by that? It means that it's a Hana of doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. That's not Hana from the Lulav.
If you could say, like, it's not Hana where you're eating the Chetza. Like, by sweeping the floor, am I getting Hana from the Chetza? Meaning, I'm getting Hana from the result. So to by sweeping the Lulav, I'm getting Hana from the result of the Chetza. I'm getting physical pleasure from what results sort of parallel to the case. I hear the kasha.
We're going to have to see it in the Rishonim and see how they're going to deal with that. We can't discuss this intelligently until we see Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Ches, specifically the case of Mayan over there. I'll send out a text later to take a vote on what shir should be on tomorrow. If we're going to have Gemara shir, we're going to have to focus on Mayan. We're going to have to focus on, because the Gemara is going to say that if you go to a mikveh in the summertime, and you have an Isra Hana from that mikveh, that it's also to go to that mikveh even for a Tefillah Shel Mitzvah. So we're going to have to see how physical pleasures play a role and how it's different than a spiritual pleasure. Okay.